We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, good morning, folks. It's No Filter Friday. We've got a great lineup for you today. We'll visit with Tim Temple. He's a candidate for the Commissioner of Insurance position here in the state of Louisiana. He actually was an opponent to Jim Donilon in the last election, and he intends to run again. So we'll visit with him to gain his perspective as to what he sees are the most pressing issues facing the next incoming insurance commissioner. John Atkinson joins us in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour. The New Orleans Entrepreneur Week is in town again from March 27th to April 1st. We'll talk about that celebration and what it offers attendees of a dynamic six-day experience with national and local industry leaders that are coming right here to the city of New Orleans. The current insurance commissioner visits with us in the first half of that hour to give us an update as to the program that he has been talking about and that we participated in the aftermath of Katrina, as to how successful that is, and trying to move folks from the citizens' property insurance to other carriers, and we'll visit with Jim Donilon. Pat Connick joins us in the back half of this hour. We'll get an update as to the Bridge City Youth Center. A lot of controversy about moving juvenile offenders to other penitentiary locations, and specifically Angola. And we'll find out what has happened since then, and we'll get an update there. It's No Filter Friday. We'll start off this morning talking about a couple of things. I wanted to revisit this case, the situation that's going on in Stanford. So the law dean apologizes to the judge and has now suspended the DEI instructor or vice dean at Stanford for her conduct in getting in the middle of this disruptive conduct that was exhibited by Stanford law students. And it was an interesting letter that the dean, Jenny Martinez, wrote about their view as to this diverse opinion, the First Amendment, and everything else that goes along with that. And for the first time, it seems as though somebody really stood up and identified, defined what should be happening in educational institutions across this country. I don't necessarily agree with the outcome that she just suspended this individual. I think there should have been more done, and you'll understand why in a minute. But the dean said that when an administrator attempts to intervene, like she did, and she said, asked the judge, is the youth worth the squeeze, meaning his coming to or agreeing to the invitation of Stanford students to come and address them because others had an opposite opinion of his, that she found that to be very problematic. And she quote, and then she says, and I quote, "A university classroom setting for a guest speaker invited by a student organization is thus a setting where the First Amendment tolerates greater limitations on speech than it would in a traditional public forum. In such a setting, limiting audience participation to signs or questions during a planned Q&A and a non-disruptive level of audience reaction is appropriate to the nature of the forum. She goes on to say that enforcement of university policies against disruption of speakers is necessary to ensure the expression of a wide range of viewpoints. She also pointed out that Stanford Law is not an echo chamber, but a place to train lawyers to act as effective advocates in a society that disagrees about many important issues. She further says, I believe we cannot function as a law school from the premise that appears to have animated the disruption of Judge Duncan's remarks. The cycle of degenerating discourse won't stop if we insist that people we disagree with must first behave the way we want them to. Further, I can think of no circumstance in which giving those in authority the right to decide what is and is not acceptable content for speech has ever ended well. Now, the dean doesn't take any action against the students. And I guess I kind of get what she's saying. She says that the conduct of the vice dean and other administrators that were there that didn't intervene pursuant to the policies and procedures of Stanford Law School sent a conflicting message signal as to what was acceptable behavior or not. So she's given the students the benefit of the doubt. I get it, because of her own administrators that kind of bumbled this all together from the first instance. But it's that proactive manner in which she's dealing with this that I think is refreshing, and it's needed, and to gain a better understanding as to what this is all about, that we need to have an open environment to be able to have this discourse of competing opinions, value judgments, and otherwise. That's what's healthy about law school. It was what I enjoyed the most in my educational experience. But really, where this goes now is unbelievable. So the DEI dean, Tyrion Steinbeck, she actually escalates this discourse between her and the dean of the law school. And she writes an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that mischaracterizes the entire discourse that happened that day on that campus. And she continues to not agree that they should have ever apologized to Judge Duncan, in this happenstance, and basically says it was merely a heated exchange, a verbal sparring match. She doesn't recognize that she tried to dress down the judge because of his rulings are, in many cases as the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal judge. And it's interesting the way that she kind of is in this alternate universe about what it is that she does. And you know why? Because she feels safe there, and she knows that she's going to be rewarded, plain and simple. There's going to be another job at another university that's going to bring her on, and it doesn't matter what happens here at Stanford, because in that universe, she's going to end up being a hero, a martyr. And we'll see what happens next as a result of this situation of openly defying the law school dean and talking about what she did and her conduct in misleading folks in this particular letter to the Wall Street Journal. And as one reporter put it, it's going to be interesting to see, because she says, the vice dean of DEI says, that she needs to strike a balance between the values of freedom of speech and diversity, equity, and inclusion that are often in conflict. And I love the final line of this article. It says, maybe it's time for the law school dean, Martinez, to realize that Steinbeck's juice isn't worth the squeeze. On another front, the Sheriff Susan Hudson, some great reporting by Mike Perlstein over at WWL, uncovering a number of internal memos as it relates to the hotel rooms that were paid for with public dollars initially. That was the intent for a number of the top command staff in the sheriff's office during the course of the Mardi Gras season. The sheriff said that there's nothing there. It's no big deal. Immediately after saying that, there's an announcement that a dog training company in Vermilion Parish donated the $18,000 to cover the cost of the rooms at the Omni Royal Orleans, Sheraton, and Marriott hotels. And in my view, the sheriff made this go from bad to worse. There's been a number of statements made about whether or not there is a financial relationship between this organization and the sheriff's office, and it looks like there's evidence to indicate that there may have been, which makes it go from bad to worse. And she says that her own CFO, the sheriff that is, chief financial officer to the organization, as well as the lawyer to the organization, both had significant concerns about what they were about to embark on. Now, the sheriff says there's no division within the office. She said, I never overruled anybody. We have debates about what goes on, and we have conversation about what goes on, and that's what we do in every instance, and then I make a decision. Got it. Been there, done that myself. Understand exactly what you're doing. But don't try to say that there's no division within the office or no overruling, because in the aftermath of this, they continued to question individuals, and they obviously had concerns. They had concerns about who were actually staying in these rooms. They had concerns about the reaction of top brass at this office not being willing or forthcoming with that information. They had concerns that maybe some of the rooms went unused. And how were they going to deal with that issue? And one of the responses from one of the top brass over there, Assistant Sheriff Laura Veazey, is really incredible. And I quote, this seems personal and is frankly creeping me out. Your obsession with where I slept during Mardi Gras, including offers to bring me a mattress while yelling expletives at me, is bothersome and borders on harassment. Well, it's simple, Laura. If you have privacy concerns, don't use the rooms that were intended to be paid by public dollars. Get your own room. Then you're in a much better position to argue a privacy concern than if public dollars are being spent. This is exactly the conduct that you want of a chief financial officer, of one who wants to dot the I's, cross the T's as to where every dollar is spent. And instead of attacking this individual, Mr. Trautenberg, you ought to be applauding this individual for trying to keep the organization on the straight and narrow. This is absolutely ludicrous when you unwrap this, as Michael Perlstein has done, as to where we are on this issue. And you wonder whether or not some of these individuals that have concerns, like the attorney Bosworth, in this case, is projecting, because he says that he has even bigger concerns. He said there could be the basis of bigger investigations if someone other than an OPSO employee used the rooms that the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office paid for. Now, why would the lawyer go there? These are questions that the council need to get answered. These are questions that need to be asked of each and every one of these individuals. These are questions that need to be resolved. And in my mind, simply because we go get a third-party vendor to pay for this does not make the questions go away. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Folks, we're back. Senator Pat Connick joins us to talk about the Bridge City juvenile detention facility. A recent report is out. But Pat, Senator, I should say, excuse me, Tommy Tucker said that you would give us an update on the state of the crawfish industry today and also an update on a crawfish eating contest.
Yeah, you can call me Pat. Newell, good to talk to you. Yeah, we have a big event in Marrero tomorrow, Saturday, the Crawfish, Louisiana Crawfish Balling Championships. It's a major event. We've been doing it for 21 years. I think we're the longest running crawfish cook-off contest around. It's going to be fun. It's going to be crowded, and the teams are ready to go.
Where would that be?
It's going to be at 601 Avenue C in Marrero, Louisiana, the campus of Immaculate Conception Grammar School, Immaculate Conception Church. It's for a good cause. It's in the heart of Marrero.
Absolutely. So, Senator, update as to where we stand. I see that there was a report issued by the Office of Juvenile Justice relative to the Bridge City community. It kind of sort of looked like things have turned around a little bit.
They have really been working, Newell, to you know, the whole system statewide has been focused on getting better. You know, since the Deputy Secretary Nelson has taken over, you know, they've been very proactive. You know, things have gotten better. And I gave you a chart, I think, to your team yesterday that shows, like, in the second quarter of 2021, there were 281 incidents of violence reported in the juvenile justice systems across the state. And then we opened a facility in Angola for to separate the bad actors from those who want a chance to rehabilitate. And the amount of incidents have dropped by 81%. So in the fourth quarter of 2022, there were 23 incidents of violence statewide compared to 281 in 2021. So things are changing. I think they have a good formula there to get the bad actors away from those who want to those juveniles who can have a chance of changing their lives, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. What has been the Southern Poverty Law Center's response to these numbers, and an update as to what's happening at Angola? I'm hearing that they're not really having that many issues. Is that true?
Well, I think that there's a group that has filed suit or thinking about filing suit about having these juveniles transferred to the Angola facility. They think it's going to scar them and cause harm. But if you look at the greater good, you know, we need that facility in Angola. You know, it's a 4 to 6 week program to teach these juveniles to, you can't act like the way you're acting, or you're going to be here for your rest of your life. It allows the juvenile justice system people to focus on educating those juveniles in the system who want to be educated. And these juveniles are learning that if you cause trouble and continue to disrupt the campuses of these centers, they have consequences. And the consequences is you're going to go to a place where it's secure and you can't escape, you can't hurt anybody, and we're going to, you know, be watching.
Senator, there's been a lot more focus on juvenile crime, juvenile offenders. A lot of folks are asking for more information. You know as well as I that there are a number of laws that prohibit that free flow of information about specific crimes and specific offenders. Do you anticipate that there will be bills in this legislative session dealing or addressing that?
I don't know about that. You know, the goal of the juvenile justice system is not to punish, but is to rehabilitate, and that's what it should be. You know, a lot of these kids are 14, 15, 16-year-olds who have grown up in a terrible environment. They know nothing better. And because of that, they get in these situations that are harmful to themselves and to others and to a life of crime. We're trying as state officials and public officials trying to rehabilitate those who need to be rehabilitated, who can be rehabilitated. But the way the system was set up was that you had 18, 19, 20-year-olds in classes with 14-year-olds, and nothing was getting done. It was just chaos. So I think the legislation you're going to see is separating the age groups, the violent groups, so you won't have all that disruption, and you can and OJJ would be able to focus on doing their jobs.
What do you say to those that that are saying that they're walking into the voting booth in the dark because they don't really know what juvenile judges are doing? They don't know, you know, what accountability measures they're taking. They don't know, about how they're going about holding people accountable. They see these horrible offenses that occurred. And in a number of cases, you have a high number, percentage of individuals that come out of the juvenile justice system that within 2 years of reaching the age of majority are in Angola. So they ask, how do we know and how do we actually vote for people that we have a system that we don't know anything about it. We're not in a position to know anything about it.
Well, I think you got to get involved. You got to pay attention to what's going on and who are the judges that are not, who are the judges that are releasing these individuals? Who are the DAs who are not, prosecuting these individuals and vote from that end? As for that they will have protections that will remain for these juveniles. And some people take advantage of those protections and use it to just for their own benefit and against the rest of the society that needs to be protected. So I see some of that happen, but these groups that are claiming that Angola is going to harm these kids, they need to get involved with OJJ and work together and find a way to help these kids instead of just, filing lawsuits.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point there needs to be a balance struck between the public's interest, obviously, and the interest of the juveniles, of those that have a chance and a shot. But those that are not, I think the most difficult part of the system is knowing when to say no and when to pull the plug, right? I mean, because we have limited resources. You know that better than most, having served in the state legislature for a long time. And you got to get the biggest bang for your buck. And sometimes that's saying no to those recalcitrant juveniles who don't really want to go through a rehabilitative experience while incarcerated.
And that's precisely, you hit it right on the head. Those who just want to cause chaos need to be separated from those who have a chance. I was at with Sheriff Lapinto, they had a riot at the Bridge City facility about a year ago or so, and at 11 o'clock at night, I went there, and it was all said and done. They were leading these boys out, and they were laughing. They thought it was like a night out on, a fun night. They couldn't care less what they did. It was just nobody could hurt them any further. Nobody could punish them anymore because they were juveniles. But that was being caused by these violent 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds influencing these younger kids who are untouchable. But that, I think, has stopped. They moved. At one point, they had 80-something juveniles at the Bridge City facility, and now it's housing about 35. And these are violent offenders, but they're not the violent offenders that go ahead and have hurt people and destroyed property.
Has, do you believe that there's a necessity for a state-mandated assessment tool relative to juveniles because we have these limited resources? And basically you have all of these juvenile districts that are competing for that limited resource, right? But yet we don't assess these kids utilizing the same assessment tools. Everybody kind of adopts their own assessment tools, which kind of, you know, has a tendency to match what they see as needs. But when we get to the state level and asking the state to provide these resources, there's not a universal assessment tool that's consistent throughout the state.
I think there is. I think you need to get Curtis Nelson on your show, and he can explain better than I. But they assessed, you know, out of the juveniles that were moved out of the Bridge City facility, about 40 of those juveniles, not everyone went to Angola. Many went to other parts of the state that had better, secure facilities. The ones that went to Angola were graded as to violence and escapes and all that other stuff. So they do have a tiered system of who is causing the trouble. And those who are causing the most trouble have been sent to Angola facility. And it's a school and they established at Angola. But I say Angola because it's easy to say. It's some kind of West Feliciana facility.
Yeah, right.
Acronym that goes on and on and on. But that facility is designed to take care of the worst of the worst, and hopefully, you know, teach them to, you know, you can't act this way. But I think there is a system statewide, and by having that drop from of 81% violent incidents across the state in the last quarters is a testament to that they work in, and the system's working now better than it was.
Yeah, there's no doubt that a lot of the focus that you brought to the issue, I think, because you look at when all of that opened, it's a precipitous drop to, you know, almost nothing next to what it was before. And hopefully they will keep that attention level on this issue moving into the future. And I'm sure that you will continue to monitor same.
Yeah. What brought it to my attention were my constituents, those who live in the interim Bridge City, the now Mile Point Association, Civic Association, and the Avondale folks. They had enough of all the escapes and all the carjackings and car thefts that were taking place. They brought it to my attention, and credit to the Office of Juvenile Justice. There was a meeting last week at the Bridge City Civic Association, the 9 Mile Point Civic Association, and OJJ was there in force. They put on a PowerPoint like they never did before. They showed them what was going on, who was being housed, and what was happening. So yeah, things are moving in the right direction. And kudos to Governor Edwards for taking charge and making these decisions. They were tough. There was going to be some resistance, you know, from a civil rights standpoint. But I think, you know, we went to federal court already, and Judge Shelley Dick already ruled that this is a necessary evil. It has to take place, moving, opening up that place in Angola.
Yeah, and obviously the stats are bearing that out. As always, we thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. Appreciate your time and your insight. And I guess you will be judging tomorrow with Tommy Tucker, is that right?
No, what I do is I get the judges there, and I make sure they it's all up and up. So, and but you're more than welcome to come. You know, you got
to
stand.
Well, that's going to be difficult for you to stay on the up and up with Tommy as a judge. You do realize that, right?
Tommy, he's been there a while. We've got Ian McNulty is an expert. We've had a lot of celebrities coming by, and the problem is when you give them. They don't realize it's a tasting concession. Just taste a few and move it on. They like to just stand and eat like they're eating in their backyard. So said, so you got to fuss at them a little bit to get the thing rolling. So,
yeah, that's the problem when you invite consumers, real consumers of crawfish to judge.
And politicians. Right? That's always a problem in politicians around.
Senator Pat Connick, thank you so much again. Have a great day tomorrow. Best of luck on that event. I know it goes to a great cause.
Thank you, Neil.
All righty, folks, we'll be right back. And the challenges at the border continues. President Biden blames MAGA Republicans for problems at the border and says his budget provides border security. after having had to be browbeat for the last 2 years. They have yet to even mention that there's a crisis going on. They continue to hit record-setting numbers, and they try to create a diversion because they have actually been able to interdict some drugs at the border, namely fentanyl, in some successful seizures. Well, others have only been talking about this, myself included, for 2 years of the problems that exist down there. And finally, recently, they've changed some of their strategies relative to this because it has become an untenable political position, a political football that they keep fumbling day in and day out. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas continues to fumble on almost every single issue, creating diversions, distractions, smoke screens away from actually what's going on. Every time you talk to a Border Patrol agent, you find out the truth as to what's happening. And what's really interesting is that the vast majority of the border agents that are interviewed are Hispanic. They understand what's going on. They've been living it for a long time. They live in the communities. They see what the challenges are, and they are having a real difficult time connecting the dots of this administration. And they will continue to play the blame game, but when you look at the data speaks for itself. That's why I love going to the data. I love the math. It has no emotion. It is what it is. And they can try and change the dialogue as much as they want. It's not going to work. Because people are experiencing the disastrous outcomes of the policies of this administration day in, day out. They see it up front, live, and in living color each and every day within their own respective communities. A border community now reaches as far as the Northeast in the northwest of this country. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. On the text line, whatever happened to Scared Straight? Some of these juveniles need a reality check. I think it was a brilliant idea to jail some of these out-of-control juveniles at Angola Prison. And we'll continue to monitor this situation to see whether or not we are able to experience the same reduction in the number of incidents at these facilities in the future. It seems as though it was long overdue. We made some really significant strategic errors historically by imploding the juvenile incarceration system in the hopes of implementing alternatives to incarceration that really never came to fruition. It was flawed in the thinking at that point in time to do so. They did it in the hopes of compelling that everybody would get on board. It backfired. It didn't happen. Because people in the know recognize and realize that a lot of what was being proposed by a number of left-leaning groups would never work operationally. Lesson learned. Hopefully we never go down that path again as we try to right the ship as it relates to juvenile justice here in the state of Louisiana. When we come back after the top of the news break, we'll visit with Jim Donilon, the Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. We'll get an update on the $45 million incentive package that the legislature approved, and they hope to remove roughly 90,000 policies from Louisiana citizens that's the state insurer of last resort, to these new companies. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Jim Donilon when we return. This is Newell on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.